I think it is so important, it is so imperative that this investigation be allowed to go forward.
Senator Murkowski expresses support for Special Counsel Robert Mueller's Russia investigation. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, April 13th. Good evening, I'm Rachel Waldholz. Also tonight, a gun control measure will not pass the state legislature this session.
The bottom line was the National Rifle Association wasn't willing to support a bill that allowed the ex parte order to seize weapons.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Matson, committed to the communities it serves, building on more than 50 years of service to the communities of Alaska. Learn more at matson.com.
Senator Lisa Murkowski today reaffirmed her support for Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 election, an investigation that has edged closer to President Donald Trump's inner circle.
I think it is so important, it is so imperative that this investigation be allowed to go forward, and it will take the course that it will take.
Murkowski spoke at the annual Women in the World Conference in Manhattan. She was on stage with Democratic Senator Kirsten Gillibrand of New York. Gillibrand supports a bill that would protect Mueller and his investigation if the president fires him. Moderator Andrea Mitchell asked Murkowski if she supports the bill too, but Murkowski didn't commit.
Depending on what this actually, the legislation that Kirsten has just described, I think most would say is reasonable.
Murkowski calls it unfortunate that the discussion of such a bill is needed.
The president should not be intervening with a firing of Mueller.
Two recent public opinion polls suggest most Americans support the investigation. One found nearly 70% don't think Trump should fire Mueller, although among Republicans, more than half say the investigation is unfair. The Alaska Senate voted to pass its version of the state operating budget yesterday, taking lawmakers one step closer to a final agreement for the year. The budget is the first in the state's history that would draw from Alaska Permanent Fund earnings to pay for government services. The Senate voted 13-7 to pass the budget after a sometimes charged debate. The final version did not include steep budget cuts the Republican majority had discussed last year. Eagle River Republican Anna McKinnon choked up as she called on her fellow lawmakers to compromise.
The people of Alaska expect us to come together. The people of Alaska are divided. If we cannot unite around a position at this point in our history, they are confused.
The Senate bill calls for $4.2 billion in state spending. 4 out of 10 of those dollars would come from permanent fund earnings. It also sets permanent fund dividends at $1,600, which lines up with the House's budget bill. That's a significant cut from what the PFD would be under current law. Anchorage Democrat Berta Gardner says the budget is unbalanced, and lawmakers have once again ducked hard choices on finding new sources of revenue.
This body in this budget is relying on our savings accounts and dividend reductions. And that's not a fiscal plan. It's a permanent fund only plan.
But Bethel Democrat Lyman Hoffman, who caucuses with the Republican majority, defended the budget.
It does provide services that Alaskans have grown to depend upon. Everyone is not pleased. And my friend and co-chairman when I was in the House of Representatives, Ron Larson said, if not everyone is happy, then maybe we've done a good job.
The Senate's bill also doesn't include education funding. The Senate has proposed $1.25 billion for school funding in a separate bill. The budget will now go to a conference committee to resolve differences between the House and the Senate. Now, there was one significant spending cut in the budget bill passed by the Senate yesterday, but it's likely not actually a cut at all. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports.
Alaska spends a lot on Medicaid, more than $600 million this year. And the federal government spends even more here, well over $1 billion. Based on enrollment growth and the trends the state has seen this year, it expects to spend more next year. The Senate budget would eliminate most of that increase. Soldotna Republican Senator Peter Michicki says the change sends a message.
The Senate is saying we're struggling with the increases. We want to work together on the least amount of increase as possible.
But Medicaid spending is non-negotiable. That's because people who the state deems eligible for Medicaid are entitled to receive health care, and the state must pay the doctors, hospitals, and other providers who provide that care. So if the state spends more than it budgeted, the legislature is going to have to budget more later in what's known as a supplemental. Michicki acknowledges a supplemental could be coming.
Focusing on the increases in a supplemental is a healthy exercise in us all working together to manage increased medical costs.
The Alaska House has voted to fund the administration's full request for Medicaid funding, which is $70 million more than the Senate. Representative Ivy Sponholz, a Democrat from Anchorage, says the Senate reduction is only a cut on paper.
It's not sincere, it's not honest with the public to artificially reduce our operating budget knowing that it's going to come through in the supplemental.
State officials have told senators that the Medicaid cuts will create uncertainty for healthcare providers and could delay payments to providers. The legislature's conference committee on the operating budget will decide whether to keep the Senate's cut. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
The only gun control measure debated in the Alaska legislature this session will not pass. The bill is intended to allow Alaska judges to order temporary seizures of guns from people they find are likely to be threats to themselves or others. House Judiciary Committee Chairman Matt Klayman said yesterday that not enough committee members support the bill. Klayman, an Anchorage Democrat, says the bill foundered on disagreements with the National Rifle Association, especially the fact that the bill would not require the gun owner to be present for the judge's hearing. These are known as ex parte hearings.
The bottom line was the National Rifle Association wasn't willing to support a bill that allowed the ex parte order to seize weapons.
Klayman says it's not practical to expect the subject of a gun violence protective order to be present.
If you call them up and say, well, let's go down to court and talk about what's going on, you're kind of inviting somebody who's not acting rationally, who may have significant psychiatric issues and has a gun, you're kind of inviting them to go off and start doing tragic things just because we're trying to give them a chance to be heard in court.
The NRA could not immediately be reached for comment. Klayman says he will continue to work on the issue after the session, and it could come up again next year. Other state legislatures are considering similar bills. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Fairbanks residents come out in force to save a popular rec center.
My kids learned to swim in Mary Sai. My grandkids learned to swim in Mary Sai.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Curious about your alcohol habits or those of someone you care about? Find a free and confidential alcohol screening at recoveralaska.org or call 211 today. This Alcohol Awareness Month, Recover Alaska reminds us that together we are stronger than alcohol addiction. Recover Alaska is a trusted source for alcohol research and resources, including an index of local available treatment options. This message sponsored by Recover Alaska.
Governor Bill Walker's Climate Change Task Force met yesterday in Fairbanks. It was the second time members have met in person since the governor established the task force this winter. The meeting came a day after a public listening session. Luke Hopkins, former mayor of the Fairbanks North Star Borough, led that session, and he summarized the comments this way.
Alaskans want to see us to be bold in our statement. There is quite an array of what that boldness would entail.
The word bold came up repeatedly at the task force meeting. Many members say it's something they want to see reflected in the policy recommendations they'll give the governor in September. But President Jim Johnson of the University of Alaska said that while he believes in the urgency of climate change, it's not the language he would choose.
I just finished reading a book, another one about the French Revolution, and there was a great deal of passion and boldness there, and about 40,000 people died in that process. So I think we need to keep that in context with what is actually practical, what is actually achievable, and what is actually cost-effective.
Most of the meeting was focused on discussing the draft climate change policy released this week, which recommends the state reduce its use of fossil fuels, increase investment in renewable energy and plan for a global transition away from oil and gas. Sam Schimmel, a high school senior from the Kenai Peninsula and St. Lawrence Island, says he likes the long-term vision of the plan, but he would like to see more acknowledgement that climate change is affecting people in Alaska today. He said his uncles, who are whalers, are just one example.
They need bigger boats because the seas are too unpredictable, and an 18-foot lund is not a safe vehicle to be traveling around in the Bering Sea in when there's no ice to protect you from high surf.
The draft plan doesn't include many specifics yet. Nils Andreasen is executive director of the Institute of the North. He moderated the task force discussion. And he says the draft is meant to be sort of a guiding document for the state. It will be paired with an action plan, which will be more granular.
That'll be describing potential costs to the state, which agencies or leads, what timeline, partners that would be involved. All of those considerations would go into that action plan.
That action plan will likely be released this summer. Andreasen says the task force plans to hold more public hearings around the state. The public can also comment online. It's a fact of life in rural Alaska that energy is expensive. In the past, one way the state helped with high costs was through grants for things like renewable energy projects or diesel system upgrades. But as the fiscal picture has changed, there are fewer grants available, and more loans are cropping up in their place. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Ravenna Koenig has this report.
At the Alaska Rural Energy Conference in Fairbanks this week, one of the big questions on everyone's mind is, how do you pay for energy projects now that there's just less grant money than there used to be? Katie Lister is the chief economist for the Alaska Energy Authority. She says that communities and rural utilities need to rely less on grants and look more to loans. Lister oversees a loan program for the Alaska Energy Authority that has gotten a significant increase in applications since 2014.
That's a very flexible loan program. It certainly is useful for communities who don't have the ability to access capital through other means.
That flexibility is important because small rural utilities often have trouble getting loans from banks. Sometimes the amount they're asking for is too small for the bank to make a profit from. Or they don't have the kind of assets that a bank wants to see to make sure the loan gets paid back. State and federal loan programs can help get around those problems. Jesse Huff works to connect communities with loan programs at the U.S. Department of Agriculture. She says that even though government loans can help rural communities access funding, there is still risk involved that there isn't with grants, and that makes some communities wary. But she thinks it's important for them to consider how expensive it can sometimes be to do nothing.
It really will and does come down to if there are no grants available and you can reduce your energy costs by 30%. If you don't do the project, you're wasting money.
For example, the city of Aleknagik, close to Dillingham, wants to retrofit 6 buildings to make them more energy efficient. City Administrator Joseph Coolidge says they currently spend $24,000 a year on electricity for those buildings. And while the city council has been hesitant to apply for a loan because they've been used to grants in the past, Coolidge is going to push them to reconsider.
We need to spend money to save money, and we'll save money years down the road when everything's all paid for.
Katie Lister at the Alaska Energy Authority says the hope is that in the coming years, the lack of grants won't keep communities from getting the resources they need to move forward on energy projects. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Ravenna Koenig in Fairbanks.
About 100 people packed the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly Chambers yesterday, and most declared they don't want the borough to demolish a popular recreation center. They told assembly members to reject Mayor Carl Castle's proposal to knock down the 68-year-old Mary Sy Recreation Center. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Like many of those in the standing room only crowd, Tom Robinson questioned Castle's ordinance that calls for demolishing the rec center as part of a plan to begin catching up on the borough's backlog of deferred maintenance.
Why pick on Mary Sy? God, it doesn't make sense.
Robinson and many others who spoke during the meeting say the facility played an important role in their lives.
I have a little bias there. My kids learned to swim in Mary Sy. My grandkids learn to swim in Mary Sy.
Deborah DeLong told the Assembly the rec center is perfect for small kids, and she says it provides a much-needed diversion and meeting place for their moms and dads.
That saved my sanity as a mother with small children. There's not a lot of things to do at 40 below for your children. This pool is your
pool. And Arlene Slocum adapted the old Woody Guthrie tune for her testimony, accompanied by guitar. Jim Gibertoni was among those who said they don't believe the analyses on which the borough officials based their conclusion that the rec center must go, because it's in poor shape and would cost more to repair or even maintain than it would to tear down.
The sky is not falling here, guys. Everything I hear is embellishment and how old the thing. I've walked through the building, I've worked on the building, I've been a plumber all my life and a builder. The sky is not falling.
Finally, at 11:30 p.m., after more than 3 hours of public comment, Assemblyman Matt Cooper moved to adjourn the meeting and resume deliberations at 6 p.m. Monday. The Assembly will then consider Castle's ordinance to appropriate $2.7 million to demolish Mary Sy and an old schoolhouse in Moose Creek and repair four other borough buildings. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
Iditarod runner-up Nicholas Petit leads this year's Kobuk 440. He was the first into the Ambler checkpoint this morning. The Northwest Alaska Trail will pass through the small town again on the back half of the race. KNOM's Zoe Gruskin reports.
Welcome home.
Thank you.
The sun was just creeping over Bornite Mountain when Nicholas Petit rode into Ambler. The French musher was the first to reach the village this morning. Ambler is the third checkpoint in this year's Kobuk 440 sled dog race, and it's where mushers tend to take longer rests. Petit took his time tending to his dogs, laying down straw and mixing up a pungent stew with water from the Ambler River, kept hot by local volunteers.
Meat mixture, and then some kibble is going to go in there with some probiotics and some psyllium.
What was the last one?
Psyllium. Like Metamucil. Gut health.
Strong stomachs are a special concern in hot years like this one. Meat can spoil quickly under the sun. Taking extra steps to prevent canine food poisoning is just one thing mushers are doing differently to adapt to the warmer weather. Though he said before the race that he was looking to win, Petit was nonchalant about his outlook.
Not really expecting any outcome, so just trying to do right by the dogs. That usually ends up being the best thing you can do.
Did you do much swapping around of the dogs on your way up here?
No, I just loaded one up about 5 miles away.
What happened?
She was slowing down. Wasn't pretty to look at, so she's cuter in the basket.
Are you going to keep her, or is she staying here?
Oh, I don't know yet.
One musher who seemed to be having a hard time with the heat was Jesse Holmes. The 2017 Kobuk champion went out fast, but was spotted by other mushers camping and loading dogs onto his sled. His handler, Clara Kneringer, arrived third into Ambler, after Petit and Tony Browning. This is her first sled dog race.
I'm driving the B team, and normally I should be way back there, and he should be here. The dogs and I, we both didn't really want to pass him, so we were like passing, stopping, till like got another leader in, and he took off then, but yeah, it was a little bit stressful to change plans. Especially for the dogs, because they were like, he's the boss, why should we go with you up front? That's not right.
By noon, a total of 9 mushers had reached Ambler, including Holmes. Petit had already returned to the trail, with one less dog. Reporting in Ambler, I'm Zoe Gruskin.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, offering online and mobile services to help Alaskans and their businesses bank on the go. Learn how experience and knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com. ConocoPhillips, investing and exploring on the North Slope and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources. And by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein. Attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugia,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechmiut.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, zero waste. The community of Haines is already doing a lot to promote less waste, but this Earth Day, a recycling organization in the southeast Alaska town is trying to take it to a whole new level. And as Daisha Eaton with KHNS reports, the community of 2500 has a big incentive to throw less away.
Every couple of months, Kelly Mitchell hauls boxes and bags full of cans, paper, and plastic in the back of her station wagon to the recycling center in Haines.
And this is probably my biggest one. I make a lot of paper trash.
It has become part of her routine.
I'm kind of a rabid sorter. I pre-sort at home.
Mitchell is one of many in Haines who rely on the center, which in 2017 shipped out nearly 300,000 pounds of recyclables with support from community membership and donations. The center is run by Haines Friends of Recycling, which started in 1999. It also takes larger items, such as appliances, for a fee. Like Mitchell, Jenny Reitz is an avid recycler.
We're using reusable bags. We're using reusable food storage.
On a shelf in her hallway are stainless steel water bottles and coffee mugs that she picked up from a secondhand store, alongside canvas reusable shopping bags hanging from hooks. But lately, she's been trying something new.
A big thing we're doing is composting.
Simplifying life through setting up her household with more reusable items, along with some other changes.
We're eating a lot of leftovers. We're trying not to waste the food that we do buy. That's a big one. And just trying to cut back on plastic.
One big change she made at her house in order to throw less away was simply not using paper towels. Instead, she bought flannel washable reusable napkins.
We still have this one roll of paper towels that we've had for a year, just for people that need it when they come over. But the cloth napkins are really all you need.
Reitz was inspired by this woman.
For my family, zero waste is not about recycling more. It's actually about recycling less by preventing waste from coming into our home in the first place.
That's Bea Johnson giving a TED Talk about the zero waste movement. The best-selling author speaks all over the globe about the idea of zero waste, which she's applied to her own home and outlines in her book, Zero Waste Home. Haines Friends of Recycling will host Johnson as part of their annual Earth Day celebration later this month. She shared her ideas with the European Parliament and the United Nations. Johnson is famous for producing just one small jar of waste a year for her family of four in the first year she tried out her zero-waste lifestyle. She does this through following the five R's: refuse, reduce, reuse, recycle, and rot.
The first rule is to refuse what we do not need. The second rule of the zero-waste lifestyle is to reduce what we do need. So in our home, we've gone through a decluttering process. The third rule of the zero-waste lifestyle is to reuse. So this glass jar filled with handkerchief is what has replaced the tissue box. The fourth rule of the zero-waste lifestyle is to recycle only what we cannot refuse, reduce, or reuse. Rot is the last rule to the zero-waste lifestyle. Today, we not only rot, compost fruit and veggie scraps, but we also compost floor sweepings, dryer lint, even our hair.
And as it turns out, there's also an economic benefit. Johnson claims that her household cut their overall budget by 40% through the changes. And that is an exciting prospect in Haines, where it's expensive to throw stuff away. If you haul it yourself, it costs 27 cents per pound to dispose of garbage at the landfill, a privately owned company. Getting one can picked up curbside weekly costs $68 per month.
There is no such place as away. We always think, well, the garbage just goes away. There is no away. It either goes into a landfill where it just sits there, or it gets shipped out, and shipping it out is an expensive proposition, especially living where we do here.
That's Melissa Aronson, chairperson of Haines Friends of Recycling. She says recycling is important, but she hopes more people in Haines will begin to reduce their household waste streams altogether.
Everything that we can do to reduce that waste stream keeps things out of the landfill, keeps things from having to be shipped out to maybe a landfill someplace else.
As for Mitchell, back at the recycling center, she says she hauls all that aluminum, paper, and plastic around for future generations.
I don't have any kids, but I feel like it's important not to fill up the earth with trash.
A way of thinking that people at Haines Friends of Recycling hope just keeps on growing in Haines. For AK, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from Jerry Ross in Anchorage. Ross coaches runners with the Alaska Endurance Project and is part of a group of more than 40 Alaskans racing in this year's Boston Marathon on Monday.
I've been running since I can remember, since maybe fourth or fifth grade at Chugach Optional, so it's been a real long time. I worked at Skinny Raven for 20 years. At some point during that, Todd List is the other coach, we decided, hey, we should have a training group. We really should share what we know about the sport of running, and so that's sort of how it originated. I've had most of my success at the marathon distance, but I've done a lot of racing from shorter distances, like 5K, 10K, done mountain races. Recently, I've been more engaged in trail running and mountain running in the summertime. When the bombs happened in Boston in 2013, I had athletes that I was coaching. So I was watching TV, expecting certain athletes to come around the corner, and I was really angry after that. And I just told myself, there's no way that I'm not gonna go and run that marathon again in 2014. So since then, I've done it every year, and it's been great. Well, one thing that's exciting about this year, in some ways for us, is the weather forecast for Marathon Monday is, I think, a low of 37 or 38 degrees and a high of 50, with winds between 20 and 40 miles per hour and up to an inch of rain. So that should make it interesting. And being from Alaska, I think it sort of works to our advantage. My goal is to finish close to what I did last year. I'm not quite as fast as I was last year, so I'm just hoping I don't hurt the team too much. I think I'm expected to be the fastest, but anything can happen on marathon race day. So I just want to try to do my part and make sure that we have a good team finish.
Jerry Ross lives in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Daisha Eaton and Emily Russell. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, Ravenna Koenig and Tim Ellis in Fairbanks, and Zoe Gruskin in Ambler. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Rachel Waldholtz. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, sustaining Alaska's pipeline for 40 years and counting. Curious about your alcohol habits or those of someone you care about? Find a free and confidential alcohol screening at recoveralaska.org or call 211 today. This Alcohol Awareness Month, Recover Alaska reminds us that together we are stronger than alcohol addiction. Recover Alaska is a trusted source for alcohol research and resources, including an index of local available treatment options. This message sponsored by Recover Alaska. This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.